Well, welcome back to another Comfort Reads episode. And this time I am joined by one of my patrons, Sarah Elkins. So, Sarah, thank you for joining me.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Yes. And it's been a while since we had the original idea of doing the episode. You've been pretty busy, so I'm glad we're able to do it now. But maybe you can introduce yourself and, tell folks something about you.
Sure. So I work in technical field. I do configuration management and DevOps. I've been doing that for a number of years now. I have been listening to your podcast and enjoying your discussion one-on-one on different Hugos, Hugo winners, mm-hmm. the novels. I grew up with science fiction in the house. My father and older siblings, ranging from Asimov to Marvel superhero comics. And when Doctor Who started playing on public television in North Carolina in the 80s, my sister Trish and I and a few friends formed a Doctor Who club, and we put on the first Doctor Who convention in our teens in my church's rec hall. We got permission and we rented a big screen TV, and people came from other cities and from South Carolina. So that was my start in science fiction fandom.
That's awesome.
And these days I go to some science fictions. Of course, this last number of months I've been doing some virtual science fiction cons, going to panels and so on. I read a lot. I do some media as well, but I'm more on the reading end. I'd almost rather be reading than watching something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, it's funny how many of my guests have listed Doctor Who as, an early inspiration.
Right. It wasn't my first science fiction, but it might have been my first science fiction show that I remember much about watching. I forget if that or Battlestar Galactica, the old one, was first.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Battlestar Galactica is definitely up there for me, the original stuff, and, Buck Rogers and original Trek as well.
Sure.
Yeah. Doctor Who is never something that it's something that I've never connected with. Every now and then I'll dip in and go, oh, I'll watch an episode, and then I'll go, all right, well, that was something, but it's never grabbed me. So
sure.
To each his own, or her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, cool. So why don't you tell me what your comfort reading is?
So the book that I selected to discuss is one of Connie Willis's books. I've read a lot of hers. This was not the first one of hers that I read, but so its name is Bellwether, and it really grabbed me. I enjoyed the other ones of hers that I've read, and I've read more of hers since then, but this one really hits a lot of sweet spots for me.
Yes.
It's a romance that also has science geeking and history geeking, 90s nostalgia, a love of reading, a love of libraries, not just of reading, but libraries. There's some satire in it, but it's not too biting. It's not cynical. It has warmth and friendship. It's short. Usually if I want to do a comfort read, I do not want to reread something that will take me 3 or 4 nights to finish. What I usually want, if I'm doing a comfort read with my life, I want something I can kind of dip into and enjoy, but not feel like I've taken up another project that's going to take me a long time.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So this one of hers, I like some of her others very well, but for me, this is just a really good comforting book. And some of her other books are perhaps a little more challenging, or have more sad things in them. So any listeners who don't know, Connie Willis has several Hugo winners. I think a short story, a novella, and a book. So anyway, she's run in various categories, and I've enjoyed her short stories and her longer works. So,
right. Yeah. She's a 3-time winner in the novel category. So I've got 2 more to go, because I've done To Say Nothing of the Dog, which I thought was fantastic. It's one of the most pleasant surprises that I've had doing the podcast. And then Doomsday Book, which I'm actually going to be doing, I'll be reading it in, you know, starting in January and for the February episode. So, and then she also has Blackout and All Clear, which is basically two books anyway. So,
right. To say nothing of the dog, I think adds even more for readers who've read some of the books that it references, but it works very well as a standalone. Even if you haven't read Jerome K. Jerome's 3 Men in a Boat, To Say Nothing of the Dog, or if you haven't read the Dorothy Sayers private detective stuff, etc., you still, it goes right along. And I think it does a good job of giving you setting without totally info dumping on you.
Yes. Yeah, I'll have to pick your brain about other Connie Wells. And you know what? I've got you on the line. I might as well do it. So one of her other books that I bought when it was cheap was Crosstalk. And I was curious, you know, where that fell in terms of, is it as funny as something like Bellwether, or is it something more serious?
So actually, that's in my pile of to-be-reads. I pretty much stopped after the first, that duology that was set around World War II that you just mentioned. I read the first one, and I was a little, I didn't realize it was one of two, and I was a little aggrieved by the sudden ending and like, but what happened? So I did later get Crosstalk, but I have a lot of books that I've, there's so many good books out there, which is great.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking down the list of Hugo winners that I still have to cover. I'm thinking, when I get to the end of that list, I can go back to reading things that I want to read, not that I have to read for the podcast.
Yeah, the idea of Crosstalk interested me enough to get it, but there it is, so...
Yeah, I purely got it just based on the author. I have no idea what the book's actually about, so... and I kind of like that, actually. So, but let's talk about Bellwether. How did you first encounter it?
So I had already read some of Connie Willis's other books, and I just turned into a regular reader of hers. The first book of hers I read was Lincoln's Dreams, which it's an odd duck. Probably not a lot of people have read that. From there, I went to go read some of her short story collections. As soon as I saw Bellwether in the store, I picked it up. And then I loved it when I read it.
Yeah.
There's a few things I wanted to talk about in going over the book with you. The main characters, the science, the minor characters, and the side quests. There's a lot going on in this book for such it's not super short. It's not like a 10-minute read, but for a book that's really not that long, it has a lot packed into it. And that's one of the things that I think Willis is so good at. What I was mentioning, how she gives, she gets you in the setting without a lot of info dumping. She really does a good job of weaving you into the story. All the science facts, all the science history that she puts in this story, it's woven through. It's not, all right, here's a big chunk that, here's the history, and I'll just wait, flip three pages, and then, it's woven through. Right. And there's a lot of conversation in this book, even when you're not reading the blow-by-blow of all of the dialogue, there's conversation going on between the characters. And that's one of the things that I enjoyed very much. So just to give listeners a little understanding of what's going on. So there's the two main characters in the story. There's Sandra Foster and Bennett O'Reilly. They are both scientists at a company. So it's corporate science, which is not the same thing as academic science, although of course there are some similarities. Grants are involved in both of these these cases. So Sandra, she's smart, she's funny, she loves books, and one of the things I liked about her character so much is her strength is also her weakness. She is so very into her subject matter of research that she's very perceptive on some things, and then she has blind spots because she's a sociologist researching fads. So she's very detail oriented. She notices things about what people are wearing, what they're saying, what are their fashions, etc. She's noticing all that all the time and thinking about how it relates to her work. But it also kind of blinds her a little bit sometimes. This guy that she meets, she thinks she's hung up on figuring out how it is that he's immune to fads. This guy Ben,
right?
And you know, she's really kind of shocked, almost literal physical shock, when she realized I've fallen for this guy in a big way, because she wasn't thinking about that at all. She's not tunnel vision. She has friends and stuff. She reads, so it's not solo, only one track, but she's pretty focused on her research area. Yeah. And so that's a strength and a weakness. And I think that's really interesting when you have characters where, Connie Willis isn't saying, now readers, this is her strength and her weakness, but reading the book, you can notice that. I liked that a lot. And then Ben, he's certainly not everyone's idea of a leading man, romance lead kind of thing. I thought he was great. He was also smart and funny, and he and Sandra got a lot of each other's humor. Little kind of comments as they go along. And also the thing that romance readers might like a lot about him, he pays attention to and remembers her research. He pays attention to what she's talking about. What is she interested in? Well, he remembers, because he starts, after they've been talking for a while, after they've been working together, he starts reflecting back to her. So this is like the thing about the cloche hats when she was studying hair bobbing, or, if he doesn't say that exactly, he is referring back to things she has clearly been telling him. And this is, again, the thing where Connie Willis isn't telling you every bit of dialogue. She talks about them hanging out on, there's this part of the book where they're standing by a paddock and watching sheep. And it's more interesting than that may sound, probably because of the way Willis telescopes it. So you see that they're talking, but she's not going into every little word that they're saying to each other. But you can clearly see he's been listening to her. He remembers what she's told him. He remembers what's important to her. And that is, that's pretty powerful in romance, that they're paying attention to things that you think are important.
Yeah.
So the science. I've worked in bioinformatics, and this setting, they're in a corporate place called High Tech, which does corporate science. And I really loved how it nailed both some of the corporate
BS.
Yeah. Well, the mindset that people get into, the lingo that they have to be able to speak to get management to understand what they're saying. And of course, the sometimes inane exercises that you're going through because there are fads in corporate management, just like there are in other areas of life. And everyone will say, someone will read an article in Harvard Business Review and maybe understand a tenth of it and decide that's our new thing we're going to do at our company. So there's a lot in there about corporate science and what it's like at a big corporation. I mentioned that Sandra is a sociologist and she's studying fads. And Ben is, he's in biology, but he's big into chaos theory and information diffusion, which is, the way he breaks it down is, how does information get transferred among members of a group? There are utilitarian skills that get transferred, like raccoons washing their food in the river or whatever, that they'll transfer among each other. And then there's non-utilitarian skills like singing or other things, depending on what group of animals you're studying, what kind of things. Also on the science, one of the things I just loved was, I don't want to give away some of her discoveries, Sandra's discoveries during the book. But there's a lot in there that if people have enjoyed watching James Burke's Connections show, this book will be your jam, because she's talking about things like the discovery of penicillin and so on.
Right.
And she goes back to how that scientist's father was on the rifle team and how that meant that he wound up at St. Mary University, and how she gets, you know, on the one hand, it's trivia, but on the other hand, it matters for how people wind up where they are. And there's a lot in this book about how chance can play a role in making discoveries. Yeah. So my absolute favorite class in college was the history and philosophy of science. It was.
Oh, I'm so jealous that you got to take that.
Oh,
it's been a hobby of mine since I got out of college, but I feel like it should be mandatory for anyone in the sciences.
I was really lucky because I was in an honors program, and this class was team taught by a physicist, a chemist, a historian, and a philosopher, and they didn't agree with each other. And it was great because we got to sit there and listen to them disagree about what science was. When did it really start being science? They had different points of view, and it was fascinating for me as a student to listen to, you know, these authority figures disagree with each other about what they were even talking about. And there were so many different angles going, looking at Thomas Kuhn and paradigm shifts to history of, you know, back to Archimedes and so on. And it was a great class. And and this book kind of called back some of that joy to me of just, it's just so interesting to me. I know that for some people it won't be, but boy, if that's the kind of thing that interests you at all, this book just has lots of it. And like I said, it's woven through. It is not like, okay, here's the chunk of history of science, and then we get to back to the romance. No, it's it's all woven.
Yeah, and that definitely landed really well with me.
Yeah,
just because I've been so interested in the history of science since I studied it. I was in engineering in college, and I feel like it's important to think about how we think about science, and you can. There's a lot of instructive stuff in the history of science.
Oh, there is, and people's, you know, people's biases really affect what goes on in science and engineering.
Yeah. Well, even kind of going back to what you were talking about the way Ben respected Sandra's work, right, and was interested in it, where, you know, you have a lot of male scientists even today who, you know, will look at the work of a woman in science and think, well, it's probably subpar. And you know, that's a belief that goes back a long time. It has deep roots in the history of science, where science was a gentleman's thing, right? And so people who weren't of a certain class or gender just shouldn't even be really looking into science, even though, of course, we have many examples of amazing work being done by women, sometimes through men.
Boy, I could just keep going and going on this. Quick things. Topical, just this weekend, a Wall Street Journal opinion piece came out criticizing Dr. Jill Biden for using doctor in her name, and it made fun of her doctoral piece, which was studying community colleges' retention rates, which actually matters. You know, not everyone is going to Harvard, and it matters who gets to stay in college. And so anyway, but he it looked to me like a gendered slur that, you know, she shouldn't be using doctor, because he didn't think what she studied was a real serious, you know, thing you should have a doctorate for.
Well, he literally called her kiddo, right? He could not have been more diminishing if he tried.
All right. Well, we'll move on. The other So the other science thing that I liked that it could have gone into a little bit more, but that's fine. I think it was very good at the bit that it did, infographics. So I don't think it used that word, but there's this great thing where, so Sandra is trying to collate and analyze all of this different sociological information about, she's trying to figure out how do fads start and why do fads start, because she thinks it's important and she's curious. Two things that, you know, go great together.
Yes.
But she's got so much data and so many variables, and she has all these clippings. You know, this is set in the, I guess, early 90s, mid-90s. You know, she has all these clippings, and she has computers. But what really is the key for her starting to make some progress on trying to analyze all this information she has is... Mm-hmm. She happens to spend time with a child who's drawing a map of Barbie's adventures. And this little girl, the map that she draws packs in information about where Barbie's going, how far Barbie's going, what is Barbie wearing. And she's using symbols and maps or she's, you know, the little girl looks at it as she's telling a story. And Sandra thinks to herself she's drawing a map, even though the girl says, I'm telling a story. But but Sandra looks at what this girl is doing and thinks, maybe there's a way that I could start graphing some of my information here, and it will let me see things in a new way. There's a lot in this book about how working outside your field or just trying to visualize things differently than you have been can give you insights into things that you're trying to study.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a lot of great science stuff in the book. So I also wanted to talk about the minor characters. There are some great minor characters in this story.
Well, yeah, I'll just say, if I can jump in here, I like to say what I thought of the book. I think I already told you that I loved it. I thought it was terrific. I listen to it on audio just because that's typically what I do for these, if it's something that I haven't encountered before. It was a really good audiobook, and the characters are really what made this for me. I enjoyed all the other stuff about the science. I liked the fact that the chapters kind of started with a little excerpt from the research about certain fads.
Yes.
I thought that was terrific. And then, like you said, the minor characters, and I'm assuming you're going to move towards Flip.
This was my first time listening to the audiobook. I had always before read it. But this time I did, and the reader for this, we probably listened to the same audiobook version. And the reader for this was really good at getting Flip's voice. So Flip is the quote assistant at High Tech, the communications assistant, and she gets about four or five different titles during the book, and she's not helpful. She's kind of a chaos agent moving through all these scientists' lives. She's a young woman who's trying a bunch of different things and clearly doesn't care that much about the job, but she's not mission oriented on making her scientists' lives easier. But she tries a lot of different fashion choices. And
duct tape.
Yes. 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 There's duct tape and Sharenkov blue, other things. And, the, eye on the forehead, which represents the individuality, she says it. I'm trying to remember exactly what she says, but anyway, Flip is not very introspective. Flip is
that's another I word. And to be clear, it was the letter I, not the
one
symbol.
One of the fun little banter things in the book is that after Flip starts wearing this eye on her forehead, Sandra and Ben start making kind of jokes to each other about
what does it stand for.
Yes, what that I stands for. So I enjoyed her. There's Billy Ray, who's someone that Sandra is kind of dating at the start of the book.
Right.
And Billy is very much into fads. He's a rancher. This is all set in Boulder, Denver,
yeah,
that area. And he's a rancher who occasionally drops in to take her out to dinner or mm-hmm. There's other stuff that the book gets into that he helps mm-hmm. her out. I liked Gina. Gina is the savvy corporate friend of
Sandra. The one who knows what to write down when they're supposed to write down 3 words.
She's the one who knows what to write down when management is having you doing team meetings and you're supposed to write down like 5 goals or 5 strategies. And she mm-hmm. writes things like optimize and synergize and that sort of thing.
Right.
and I did enjoy Gina a lot. I would say that with my experience in my work group, I'm kind of the Gina. because I've been to a number of these meetings and because I understand the corporate stuff, our dad growing up had us, we could pick a stock to get like a couple of shares of for Christmas. And mm-hmm. he really loved business and he read the Wall Street Journal to us. bedtime stories and that kind of stuff, you know. So anyway, I did kind of grow up knowing some of the corporate stuff. And mm-hmm. so at meetings, you know, I'll know what corporate means when they say something. And I have sometimes had the head swivel to me to, Sarah, please interpret what is happening here.
Translate, please.
So, you know, but Gina, in addition to being just savvy in the corporate stuff, she and Sandra don't have a lot of heart to hearts, but Sandra is the person that Gina goes to when people are kind of piling on to Gina about mm-hmm. a choice she makes when she hires Flip's new assistant, who is called Cheryl, and so Gina is one of the things I liked is, you know, because of Gina and Sandra together, they are not talking about dating. They're talking about science. They're talking about corporate world. You know, if you want a book that passes the Bechdel test, this book definitely passes it. There's a lot in there that's not at all about the dating. You may not mm-hmm. even realize it's a romance book until Sandra realizes she's fallen for this guy. You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot in here that's not about romance. And anyway, mm-hmm. Gina's one of the people that's kind of exercised with. There's Alicia Turnbull, who's kind of the antagonist. I wouldn't call her a villain. She's not doing dirty tricks or anything like that, but she's... she and Sandra do not become friends.
No. And we didn't mention, they're all trying to sort of compete to get this Leibniz research grant, which is this lucrative grant.
Right. Their employer, Hi-Tech, has decided that one of their scientists needs to get this grant. And they've done analytics, and Alicia has really gotten into the analytics of trying to figure out how to handicap and predict, you know, how to design some study that they'll hope to get grant money for. And then the last minor character that I enjoyed was Cheryl, who is hired on as the assistant, and Cheryl is not a popular choice among many of the corporation because Cheryl is a smoker and that becomes a plot point as well.
Yes. Flip kind of turns into, what was the name of that character in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix? Umbridge, Dolores Umbridge, where she keeps coming up with more and more arcane ways to object to smoking.
So yeah, let's get into this a little bit. This is actually the major caveat I would have about the book for people because there's a whole thing in the book where Sandra decides. So everyone's against, many people in the book are against Cheryl, who is a smoker.
Right.
And Sandra's attitude is that this is a fad. This anti-smoking is a fad. And I get to a degree what she's saying in that when Flip starts circulating a petition that Cheryl can't, well, it doesn't name Cheryl, but saying, you know, no smoking in the parking lot of this large corporation, you know, where there's, you know, hundreds of cars, and Flip is circulating a petition that there should be no smoking, not just in the building.
Right.
All right. So I get that definitely there is some going overboard in the anti-smoking. However,
well, the third hand smoking, right?
Right, right. When she, right, she's not even smoking, but she's breathing out. You know, she, the smoker, is breathing out air, even if it doesn't have cigarettes. Her lungs have had cigarette smoke in.
Right.
However, so my mother died of COPD. My father died of lung cancer. I have asthma. And when I leave a building where there's no smoking in the building, but the smokers have clustered around the exit, and I have to go through a wall of smoke, I have a certain amount of sympathy and don't view it as just a fad to say, you know, don't smoke right outside the exit, that kind of thing. That's not just faddishness. It's so I would say that's a caveat of the book, because for some people that's not going to play well for them. For me, there's so much I like about the book that I just kind of la-la-la when that kind of that comes up as a plot point, and I move by it. So, but no book is perfect, and I would say that that is something that people may have an issue with.
The other sort of mid-90s thing that it has in terms of the fads is, the coffee shop converting over to like a Starbucks kind of place, right? You remember that? Like, coffee shops used to be just places you got coffee. You didn't have to go and get some complicated, vaguely coffee-ish thing that now everybody's like, I love coffee. And I'm like, how much sugar is in that? Do you really like coffee?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people like coffee drinks, and Starbucks turned it into a whole encounter experience where they have themed music, and you know what you're going to get when you get in there. And I prefer the indie shops, but I, there didn't even used to be a huge number of indie shops, as I recall it. Maybe there were, and I was just oblivious because I used to not drink a lot of coffee, and I try not to drink too much coffee now. Yeah.
I very rarely buy coffee when I'm outside the house.
So. Yeah. This book definitely is showing up some of the 90s fads that come and go. There's Cabbage Patch Dolls and other things.
I did feel for Sandra when her favorite shop stopped carrying iced tea.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love iced tea.
I totally get it. I mean, it's really disappointing when a place that you like going to suddenly doesn't do the things you like anymore, you know, or they close down entirely. Yeah. And we've all had that experience. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll all kind of get you know, even not everyone likes spiced tea. So Sandra has, for listeners, Sandra has this spiced tea drink that she likes at the shop that's across from the library. And, or I think it's, I think that's where it is. And because she very frequently goes to the library and then goes right to this shop, which.
Right. And battles with the librarian.
Yes. there's one librarian who knows what the deal is. And then that librarian goes off on vacation. And that's part of this whole, there's a period of turbulence during the book where, you know, the assistant librarians all keep claiming that she didn't turn in one of Browning's books in any way, a library book. There's a lot of things that are kind of going wrong for Sandra for a while. Anyway, when she keeps going to this shop that used to have the drink that she likes, first they don't serve that drink anymore. And then that shop goes through three or four iterations of name changes and staff changes and so on.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's very true. So that's getting into, I had a little section on side quests that, happen during the book. And one of them is the quest for the spiced tea. She keeps going back to this place because it's right by the library. even right. though for a while they don't serve the spiced tea that she likes. There's mm-hmm. the quests of making sure the library doesn't get rid of books that Sandra thinks they ought to have. So when she goes into the library, mm-hmm. she finds out that they've been getting rid of books that haven't been checked out in over a year, which libraries have limited right. shelf space. They're certainly, I remember when libraries used to only have one copy of the bestseller. And if you didn't have it, well, your choice was to wait for 8 months or to buy it yourself. And then right. libraries did yeah, start yeah. as a trend to get 20 copies of those books. That's definitely a change that happened. But because they're mm-hmm. doing that, they don't have as much shelf space for the old books. And so Sandra,
right.
every time she goes to the library, she checks out some of her favorites, some classics that she wants to make sure that the library doesn't run an analysis and say, oh, well, this book hasn't been checked out in a year. Let's get rid of, I don't know, the Iliad or whatever it is yeah. that, you know, that Sandra mm-hmm. thinks they ought to have. And of course, that is, it's not completely moot now, but now with the Internet Archive and public domain and so many books that you can get on your Kindle, et cetera, of course, not everyone has yeah. a phone with a Kindle app or a Kindle, much less. So there is still some importance to that, but yeah, there are pieces that, you know, will, you know, this is definitely set in a specific place and time. Which yes. some people might see as dated, but I find that there's a real pleasure to me in a book that's yeah. in a specific place and time and not just kind of in a sea of everywhere and every time. Yeah. So the other side quest I was going to mention is the birthday parties. So Sandra oh, yeah. is friends with many of her female coworkers. And that includes people from HR. And, you know, it's not all just the scientists. And anyway, one of the socialization things that sometimes you get sucked into is going to each other's birthday children's birthday parties, even if you don't have a child of your own. I'm very familiar with that dynamic. Right. And so there's several birthday parties in this book, or at least two, maybe three. And they also, you're seeing the fads. Of, you know, there's one thing where yes. one parent tells her daughter, absolutely not, the theme of this party can't be Power Rangers. Now, the book doesn't get into why did she have a beef against Power Rangers, but, you know, they definitely used to be more of a thing maybe than they are now. And maybe it's come back again since then because mm-hmm. of movies and blah, blah, blah. There is a part where Sandra is going all over town. There's been a favor trade. Gina, the corporate savvy person, is helping her with a grant application. And so Sandra is going to all these different toy stores looking for a specific Barbie. And it's, right. oh dear, it's romantic something Barbie. And it can't be some other romance yeah. bride bar, you know, in any way, it's a very specific Barbie that she's looking for, and she's going to everywhere, Toys R Us and all that kind of stuff. So I just enjoyed that. Back to the spiced tea. I imagine that as being a kind of a chai. It's a spiced tea. Yes. I guess this is a very, it's a minor spoiler to the book, but the tea does finally pop up again in another incarnation, with a different name. It's right. no longer called what it used to be. But the thing is, Sandra tries this drink that doesn't have the right name. Sandra is a very open character. She says, no, I want to see, mm-hmm. you know, she has ordered this drink and, you know, is not expecting anymore that she will find her beloved spiced tea again, but she's trying it because she does try things. She's pretty open to things. And that's one of the things I like about her character.
Is it a hot drink or a cold drink? I was remembering it was a cold drink, which is why I said iced tea earlier.
I think it is an iced tea and it's a spiced tea.
Okay.
I believe that's correct. Okay.
I
guess it doesn't matter hugely. having grown up in the South, I am used to unsweet iced tea, and that's the way I like it. If I'm having an iced tea, I want it unsweet. But okay. Spices are fine, but I don't like, I don't tend to, it's just me. I like coffee with milk, no sugar, and I like tea with no sugar. So that's just it.
I'm kind of a big tent person, right? I can appreciate sweet tea when every time I try it, I'm like, whoa, okay, it is really sweet, isn't it? But then once I adjust to it, I'm like, okay, it's really good too. But I also like it either unsweetened or somewhere in between. When I make it at home, I tend to make it just with a little sweetener, but. Or mixed with lemonade, and then it's perfect. I've been in a large corporation my entire career, going back to 1997, and so the stuff where essentially it's a lot of stuff that you might see in something like Office Space.
Yes.
At high tech, it could be Inatech from Office Space, but I wanted to go through kind of some comps for that, because there's definitely some Dilbert in there as well,
right?
Where Sandra literally refers to her boss as management.
Yes, I did love that. Management never gets a name. It is always just management, standing in management's office. Now, I think management's secretary had a name, though I don't remember what it was. So talking about comps, I was trying to think about this. I mean, I would say this book is a little bit of an outlier for Connie Willis. The most comparable are some of her short stories, I would say, because some of her short stories are contemporary and not science fiction or fantasy. They're just kind of slice of life or often with a little bit of science mixed in. But those are shorts. I don't know of a lot of books that are like Bellwether.
I have one.
Okay. But I would say you're on the money with getting away from the science aspect altogether, but just the management, casting that eye at just management inanity. I think you're on the money with Office Space and Dilbert and that sort of thing as far as getting that. Now, some of those have a little bit more bite and not so much of the warmth of this one. What were you going to say, Seth? For comps.
So the book that I would bring in here as a comp is The Rise and Fall of Dodo by Neal Stephenson and I can't remember Galland. The name is Galland. I can't remember her first name. But it's very much a bureaucracy of the US government kind of thing. They're using science to kind of create magic. It's complicated. Essentially, they look back and they go, hey, when did magic stop? You know, magic used to be real and it stopped at some point because of something. And so if we can figure out how to create a space where that influence isn't there, then maybe we can actually do magic again. And it's this ridiculous, you know, D-O-D-O is similar to the eye on the forehead thing where they keep coming up with new acronyms for it. Cause I think it's like Department of Ditemporal Operations or something. Because there's a time travel element as well, but the characters keep giving it different ridiculous names, and that's, you know, the whole acronym thing is very much something that I'm familiar with. I first was working where I work, we had a four-letter it's really an initialism because it's not a word, and like a year in they said, hey, we're changing the name of our department, and they renamed it so it had the same four letters. So I thought, why does this matter? Why does it matter what the letters stand for? But ridiculous. But yeah, Rise and Fall of Dodo. It has the bureaucracy element of it, and it's very funny. So that's why I think of it.
So I have not read that one. There is another Neal Stephenson that has perhaps a little bit of that called Zodiac, which is one of his early works, and a lot of people don't like it. I think it does have some strong points. A quick précis is the main character is an environmentalist who keeps trying to do research on corporations, pollution, and so on, and doing proactive things like he writes his own briefs to send to the newspapers because he knows that newspapers, reporters are so busy, you know, corporations are sending them pre-written, you know, press blurbs, which reporters will just copy from. And so he does the same thing. And although he's not a corporate dude, he understands things that are happening there. Among Willis's own works, I would say one that is in some ways similar, although it, well, so I was going to say Uncharted Territories. That is a book where you have a couple of explorers on a planet. So it's definitely science fiction, unlike this book, which is contemporary US. But they are dealing, they're researchers, they're explorers, but they are working for a corporation. And they are sometimes dealing with corporate things going on. And there's things that I don't want to spoil it. So anyway, I'll say they're of Willis's books. That one has, you know, that one has some aspects that line up, you know, so the kind of, if you like this, then you'll like this. If you like, Uncharted Territories, you might like, Bellwether. And I'm thinking of a set of mysteries, and sadly I can't quite, Sparkle Hater is the name of the, or the nom de plume of the writer, H-A-Y-T-E-R. Anyway, she wrote this set of mysteries with a corporate reporter. And there's a whole lot of corporate stuff going on there and maneuvering between people. You know, she's trying not to get eaten by the corporate machinery, but there are things going on with news media, with at her company, and people making power plays for this or that. And those mysteries, the tone is definitely different. She's snarkier, more cynical. The path to true love is not in one single book in this series, but this series of mysteries by a reporter, and I know the author's name is Sparkle Hater. And some of them are quite good.
This is the Robin Hudson series?
Yes. Yes. Ha ha. Okay. Good job.
Yeah, I Googled it in the background.
Oh, well, good. Good. Yeah, that sounds just right.
Okay.
So it's definitely got some of that kind of fun, modern take, you know, kind of a wry look at things going on. But I wouldn't say it has the sweetness that Bellwether has.
Yeah, and that's that really is something that I like about this book, is it's charming.
Yes. Yes.
And it is warm, like you said. The I think the funniest moment that I can think of from the book is when the sheep break out of their pen and into the building. Oh man. That was great.
Yes. There's such a lot of warmth in this book. So I mean, for recommending books with that kind of warmth, I might be going back to other romance writers like D.E. Stevenson, who's largely forgotten these days. She was a cousin or something of Robert Louis Stevenson, and she wrote a number of really good, they don't have the science-y stuff in them like Connie Willis did, but they're not just romances. You know, there's a lot going on. There's village life and so on. And I just like her main characters. And so, you know, if you want a book where you like a main character, you know, this book of Connie Willis's, and I do like D.E. Stevenson. She's written, I don't know, 40 books or something like that. But anyway, as far as other books with that kind of fun science-y angle to it, I don't know a lot of fiction that has that you know, sort of connections, interweaving of science, history, facts. A much, much darker book that I do recommend, but it takes some fortitude to read, is called Version Control, and Dexter Palmer is the author. Of course, the title caught my eye because I do configuration management, and version control is part of that. In Version Control, you have a scientist who is very firmly not doing time travel experiments. That's not what he's doing, because he knows that anyone will look at an application to do time travel experiments and they will, you know, put a big red mark and say, this guy is clearly a nut job, but he's doing time travel experiments. And it has corporate and academic stuff in it. It's set, I would say, near future, maybe 5-10 years from now, maybe not even that far out. And it has a lot of science and science funding, science grants, what it is like to try and work in an atmosphere where you're always under pressure for results. Right. There's a fair bit of unhappy stuff in this book. It's not a light read, but you know, if you take away the happiness part of Connie Willis's book and are just looking at the science and corporate stuff, this book has a lot to it. And it also has, analysis of more and more intrusive social media and so on. It has corporations and the president know when your birthday is and send auto messages and that sort of thing. Right. Games that corporations sell to try and upsell you in, say, even in dating applications, where if you find someone, you stop using the app. So they don't necessarily want you to find someone when you're dating. So it's very good. It's definitely completely different in tone from Bellwether. So, I wouldn't say there's a lot of books like Bellwether. There are a number of books that have some aspects of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I mean, it's an unequivocal recommend from me. I thought it was terrific. So I want to thank you for suggesting it as a Comfort Reads episode.
Well, you're welcome. I'm really glad that you enjoyed it. I do think a lot of people might enjoy it if they give it a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is 2 for 2 for me for Connie Willis, and we'll see what happens when I read Doomsday Book. I've been told it's not necessarily the book you want to be reading in pandemic times.
I could talk more about Connie Willis, about Doomsday Book. I've read that one. I'll just say a little. It does have to do with she has a whole series, short stories and longer fiction, that have to do with time travel.
Right.
And this is one of those books. And it does also have academic and science and research stuff together,
right,
and a whole lot of human interest stuff going on. So,
I'm looking forward to that. So
good.
Final thoughts.
It is a book I go back to every once in a while. And I was surprised how, in some parts of it were really fresh and really relevant to right now, talking about fads and people getting caught up in hysteria and so on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it clearly wasn't written with today's times in mind, but it's pretty applicable even now.
I think anytime you can, read about scientists doing their work, and sometimes you look at the work and you're like, I'm not sure why that's important, but, you know, that's not necessarily for me to judge. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists doing their work oftentimes make discoveries outside their fields, or the book goes into that several times, where different factors will wander in and knock somebody towards a discovery that's really, really important.
Right. And sometimes the practical application of a particular field of study isn't clear until 100 years later. There's definitely math stuff that didn't become clear until rocketry was happening. So pure science, it is hard to find funding for that these days. But you know, there is still some of it going on. And it can lead interesting places.
Again, Sarah, thank you so much for doing this. And if people want to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
So I'm on Twitter as Configures. So think configuration, only make it a verb. or you can search for my name, Sarah Elkins, on Twitter. That's mostly the social media that I have open. My Facebook and other stuff is more closed.
Okay.
So, but I do tweet some about professional stuff, some about science fiction, some about video game music and other things. There, and happy to hear from people if you want to talk about Connie Willis or other stuff.
Nice. Perfect. Okay. Well, thanks again for doing it, and I'm sure we'll talk again.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, everybody, I hope you enjoyed that discussion. I really, really enjoyed Bellwether, and it was great having Sarah on the podcast. This is going to be the last episode that I post in 2020 for in the Hugo's feed anyway. And so I just want to thank everybody for listening. I know this has been quite a year, quite an experience, and I want to thank everybody who's been there and been encouraging to me. I hope that this podcast has been something good in this year. And if you want to reach out to me and let me know that you've been enjoying the comfort reads or the regular episodes, if you want to do that, I'd love to hear from you at Hugo's Podcast. You can also send me an email, feedback@hugospodcast.com, or just go up to the website and fill out the contact form. And of course, if you want to sign up to support the podcast on Patreon, you can do that, patreon.com/hugospodcast. So that'll be all. And so I want to wish everybody, it's Hanukkah right now, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, whatever other holidays, and happy New Year when that eventually rolls around. So thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye.